Okay, I call this meeting of the House Property Tax Division to order. Is there a motion to move the minutes from March 16th?
I would love to make that motion.
Okay, discussion. Anyone, okay, so all in favor? Anyone oppose? The minutes are approved. Okay, so we have a really packed schedule today. Next, we are going to move to discuss the Property Tax Division Report, which is the Delete Everything Amendment to House File 1377. Just so that everyone knows the roadmap for today, we're going to hear first from Chair Lislegard. He's going to provide opening remarks, and then the nonpartisan staff will walk us through each section of the bill, followed by a brief overview of the spreadsheet. Then we will hear testimony from Commissioner Marquardt, followed by public testimony on the bill. For those wondering, on Friday, we will reconvene at 1 p.m. to take up the DE amendment and have member discussion, including markup of the bill. Chair Lislegard, whenever you're ready to proceed.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I also want to thank the staff and everybody who's here as we do this walkthrough. Before I turn it over to nonpartisan to go through the bill section by section, I just want to talk about where this committee started. This committee had a vision of peeling back the onion. I think that's the term that I used to really understand why property taxes were on the rise and what are the tools and levers that we could use to impact people's lives in a positive way. And I think as all documents are fluent, obviously change is possible, but I think what we're going to put forward today is a true wonderful document that puts the state of Minnesota in the right direction, and it helps improve people's lives. That was the whole goal. And then I'll do closing remarks afterwards, Madam Chair, but I think it's best that we as a committee walk through and hear public testimony.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So first, we're going to go to Mr. Swanson for the first three articles.
Madam Chair and members, Jared Swanson with House Research. As Chair Lislegard said, we're going to do a section-by-section walkthrough of the DE amendment that is the Property Tax Division Report. Members should have a House Research summary in their packets that might be helpful to follow along with as we walk through the bill.
Oh, Mr. Swanson, can you speak into the mic or adjust it, please? Thanks.
Yes. Is that better, Madam Chair?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to start with Article 1 of the bill, which is the property tax article. And Madam Chair, if it works, I think we'll just pause at the end of each article for questions. If you would prefer something else, let me know.
That's right. So just as a reminder, we will do technical questions today on the amendment and then member discussion on Friday. So thank you.
So, Madam Chair and members, Section 1 of Article 1 extends the current exemption for certain hangars, the property tax exemption for certain hangars to those used for the manufacture of aircraft, provided that the hangar is located in an airport that's not owned by the Metropolitan Airports Commission or by a city with a population over 50,000. This section of the bill would also provide for 12 years of 50% reduction in net tax capacity for airport hangars that are used for the manufacture of aircraft and the check-in area of certain airports, provided that the property is located at an airport owned by a city with a population between 50,000 and 150,000. Section 2 of Article 1 requires that the land underneath solar energy generating systems that contain more than one of these systems be classified as 3A commercial if these systems can't be combined with each other for the purposes of the solar energy production tax. Section 3 extends for an additional 10 years a property tax exemption for a property in Minneapolis owned by the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe. Section 4 establishes a property tax exemption for an elderly living facility in Duluth. Sections 5, 6, a portion of Section 8, along with Section 9, all deal with the Community Land Trust Bill that this committee heard earlier in session. So these sections combined would allow community land trusts that are owned and used as a homestead by the occupant to qualify for the 4D property tax classification at a reduced rate of 0.75%. These properties would still be able to receive the homestead market value exclusion, and they would be eligible for property tax refunds. Now, moving on to Section 7 of Article 1, this section would allow the surviving spouses of veterans who died before receiving the 100% total and permanent disability exclusion to apply for the exclusion anytime after the death of the veteran, regardless of when the veteran died. Section 8, again, a portion of this relates to the community land trust provision. This section also increases the value thresholds and the maximum exclusion amount for the homestead market value exclusion. These are the same as was heard in House File 1504. Section 9, again, is a community land trust provision, and Sections 10, 11, 12, and 13 of Article 1 increase the household income limit for the senior citizens property tax deferral program from $60,000 up to $96,000. These sections also reduce from 15 to 5 the number of years that the homeowner must own and occupy the property before qualifying for this program. And Madam Chair, that concludes Article 1, the property tax article.
I think seeing no questions, we can move on to Article 2.
Madam Chair and committee members, Article 2 is the mineral taxes article, and these provisions are the same as was heard in the DE amendment to House File 2012. I believe that was heard last week by the committee. So these make a number of changes to both the net proceeds tax and the production tax. So Section 1 is a conforming change related to Section 4. Section 2 expands the definition of the taconite assistance area to include certain areas where non-ferrous mining is occurring. Section 3 is another conforming change related to Section 4. Section 4 of the bill relates to the net proceeds tax, which is the in lieu of property tax on non-ferrous mining. So this section would convert the 2% net proceeds tax to a 0.4% tax on the gross proceeds of non-ferrous mining operations. This section would also establish a new minimum payment for mining operations that have secured all the required permits to mine but have not yet started mining. Section 5 of Article 2 changes the distribution of the gross proceeds tax. So the first change in this section is that for the first 5 years that any distributions of the gross proceeds tax are made, the first 10% of that distribution would go to the cities of Aurora, Babbitt, Ely, Hoyt Lakes, Bowabic, and Embarrass Township. The remaining 90% would flow through the distribution as you see in the table in the House Research Summary. Again, this section also makes changes to some of these distribution percentages, and you can see those in the table. It's probably easier to find them in the table as I go through them here, but the first change is in the first row of the table, and that is for the distribution to the city or town where mining or processing occurred. Under current law, that those cities receive 5% of the distribution. That would remain true under this bill, but if the mining is occurring in the Mesabi East School District, that 5% would be shared by the cities of Aurora, Babbitt, Ely, Hoyt Lakes, Bowabic, and Embarrass Township. The next change to the distribution is for the county distribution. That percentage would be reduced to 10%. The amount of the distribution to the property tax relief account would be reduced to 5%. The distribution to the IRRR would be increased to 20%. And then finally, the last row of the table establishes a new 10% distribution for capital improvements to Giants Ridge. Section 6 is another conforming change related to Section 4. Sections 7 and 8 of this article relate to the production tax distribution. Section 7 would keep the distribution to counties at 21.05 cents per taxable ton. Under current law, this distribution is set to increase by 5 cents per taxable ton beginning in 2024. And Section 8 would keep the production tax distribution to the school consolidation account at 10 cents per taxable ton. Under current law, this distribution is set to decrease by 5 cents beginning in 2024. Section 9 is another conforming change, and finally, Section 10 of Article 2 provides a one-time transfer of any excess from the property tax relief account to the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation account up to $6 million. Madam Chair, that concludes Article 2, the mineral taxes article.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Okay, well, seeing no questions, let's move along to Article 3.
Madam Chair and members, Article 3 is the Property Tax Aids, Credits, and Refunds article. Section 1 of this article is a conforming change related to the electric generation transition aid that's in Section 19 of this article. I'll talk more about that when we get to Section 19. Section 2 of this article reduces the homestead credit refund copay percentages for all income ranges by 5 percentage points. And Section 3 is just another conforming change related to the property tax refund. It just specifies the statutory year for the inflation adjustment that exists within the property tax refund program. Sections 4 through 14, along with Section 20, 21, and 25, are all the provisions that were included in the original House File 1377. And members may remember this is the bill that made changes to the local government aid formula and the county program aid and local government aid appropriations. So all these sections are as was heard by the committee, with the exception of the appropriations, which I'll talk about in just a minute here. So all of these sections combined, again, it's 4 through 14, 20, 21, and 25. All of these provisions would modify the LGA formula, and you can see those changes again in Section 6 of your summary. This is the formula update that the committee heard earlier in the session. These sections would also increase the LGA and CPA appropriation and annually index those appropriations. The one change with all of these provisions is with the appropriations. So as heard in committee earlier this session, those appropriation increases were for $150 million each. The appropriations in this bill, which you can find in Section 12 and 13 of Article 3, would increase both the LGA and CPA appropriation by $100 million each. The remaining changes in those sections are mainly technical conforming changes. They remove some definitions, add new definitions, and clean up some outdated language that are in those sections of statute. So moving on to Section 15. Section 15, along with Section 16, 17, and 22, were all included in House File 825, which was the PILT provision heard by this committee earlier in session. So these four sections combined make the following changes. So they increase from $2 to $3 the per acre PILT payments for county-administered and DNR-administered other natural resources lands. These sections create two additional PILT payments for counties with high proportions of PILT acreage. They prevent the appraised value of acquired natural resources land from decreasing from one appraisal to the next. They index the natural resources land PILT payments. And they require the Department of Revenue, in consultation with the Department of Natural Resources, to produce a report on the valuation methods used to value certain shoreline property. Again, those sections were 15, 16, 17, and 22. Section 18 of Article 3 establishes a Soil and Water Conservation District aid. This is as heard by the committee, with the exception of the appropriation. So in this version, the appropriation was reduced to $12 million annually. There are a few other technical updates to the language included in that section as well. Section 19 establishes an electric generation transition aid for counties, cities, townships, and school districts that lose tax base when an electric generation plant is retired. Again, sections 20 and 21 were included in the LGA changes that I already discussed, and 22 was included in the PILT provision. Sections 23 and 24 of Article 3 provide LGA penalty forgiveness for the cities of Morton and Echo, provided that the state auditor certifies that each city, or that they received each city's financial report from calendar year 2020. And finally, members, Section 25 again was included in the LGA changes that I discussed earlier. The last thing I'll note on this article is that members should have updated runs of the LGA and CPA changes that are included in this provision in your packets. And Madam Chair, that concludes Article 3.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Are there any last questions before we move to Article 4? Okay. We'll move right along. So next we have Mr. Sean Williams, who will go over Article 4.
Chair Lee and members, for the record, I'm Sean Williams from House Research. I'm going to be talking about Article 4, which is the renter's credit article. This is very similar to the bill that was heard in committee earlier this year. It would convert the Minnesota renter's credit into a refundable income tax credit, and it would also change the income definition used to calculate that credit from household income under current law, which is a broader definition of income, to adjusted gross income. This article is largely unchanged substantively from what we've heard previously. I'm going to note a couple technical changes that have happened that are sort of new language that was brought in at the suggestion of the Department of Revenue. So sections 1 and 2 have to do with current law that allows you to designate renters credit payments to the state election campaign account. And this would continue to allow people to make those designations under the new simplified form for the renters credit that the bill is establishing. Sections 3, 4, and 5 relate to data disclosure. And again, that just sort of provides the same data classification that would apply to the renters credit under current law, except it would also apply to this new simplified form that's being established. Sections 5 and 6 deal with the statutes governing tax preparation and tax preparers, and just adds this new simplified form that we're creating in the renter's credit article to those tax preparer rules. Sections 8 and 9 deal with due dates for property tax refund claims, and these are, again, updating to reflect the credit is now in income tax. Sections 11 and 12 deal with penalties for tax preparers that file inaccurate or misleading claims for property tax refunds. Again, these penalties exist in current law, and this would just apply them to the new renter's credit. And then jumping down, there's language in 20 and 21 that's sort of reorganizing the definition of manufactured home that currently exists for the purposes of property tax refunds. So one of the challenges of this reorganization is that the renter's credit is going to be moved to the income tax, but there are still claims for the homestead credit refund that are based upon rent paid, and those deal with individuals that live in manufactured home parks that pay, make ground lease payments, and those ground lease payments may count towards your property taxes payable for the homestead credit refund. So this is kind of reorganizing that language in Chapter 290A. Section 23 is new. It strikes a definition in Chapter 290A, or a requirement that data be delivered from the counties to the Department of Revenue on a magnetic computer disk. So it now says that the data must be delivered electronically. Section 24 is that relates to language that was in the bill previously allowing. Under current law, you can claim both the homeowner and renter's credit if you're eligible for both. And that was repealed because it was kind of assumed to be the case because now they're coded in different places. But this language is being reinstated just to clarify that you can continue to claim both credits if you're eligible for both. And that's all the new language in Article 4.
Great. Okay, well, seeing no questions, we will move along to Article 5. So next we have Mr. Cope from Nonpartisan Staff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Justin Cope, House Research. I'm going to be walking through Articles 5 and 7 of the Division Report. Article 5 is on tax increment financing. Sections 1 through 13 of this bill, with the exception of this article, with the exception of Section 6, are all from the OSA's TIF bill. Section 1 amends the definition of administrative expenses for the purposes of tax increment financing. That definition is currently defined by what expenses do not count as administrative expenses. This would be listing expenses which do qualify. Section 2 as a definition of a pay-as-you-go contract and note, which is a obligation that evidences an authority's commitment to reimburse the note holder for their expenses, that pledges increment to the reimbursement, and that has the note holder bearing the risk that increment may be insufficient for reimbursement. Section 3 removes an annual reporting requirement that TIF authorities report the month in which they first receive increment. Section 4 amends how administrative expenses are calculated when determining the amount of administrative expenses. It includes from those calculations the amount that are returned to the county auditor as excess increment or as remedies. It also exempts from caps on administrative expenses money which comes from selling or leasing property that was purchased by the authority using increment, which is spent on maintaining those properties. Section 5 makes a grammatical correction. and also adds payment of administrative expenses to listed purposes for which TIF revenue can be used. Section 6, which was not in the OSA TIF bill, limits the applicability of certain income limits that apply to housing projects developed by housing districts, so that those limits would only apply to districts located either within the metropolitan counties or within cities with populations greater than 50,000 people. Section 7 makes several changes to the pooling limits as they're calculated for the purposes of tax increment financing. Currently, county road costs are excluded from the calculation of increment before they determine in district and out of district percentage of increment. This would be also including other county administrative costs in the amount that are excluded from the calculation of the in-district and out-district percentage of increment. It exempts certain amounts paid to the county auditor or returned to the county auditor from counting towards the total revenue derived from the district for the purposes of calculating those percentages. And it considers all other amounts paid to the county auditor to be expenditures within the district for the purposes of these pooling limits. Section 8 is a slight rewrite of the five-year rule. The five-year rule currently states that expenditures within the district, this is just rewriting it so that it clarifies that if an expenditure is not for the purposes approved by the five-year rule, it is considered not to have been spent within the district for the purposes of the five-year rule. And it removes an obsolete reference to public infrastructure projects. Section 9 rewrites the six-year rule. It requires the certification of the district once the in-district amount of increment is sufficient to pay off in-district obligations, excluding a pay-as-you-go contract and note. For pay-as-you-go contract and note, it defers the certification of the district for individual parcels whose increment is pledged to pay off those notes. Section 10 makes a clarifying change in the formula for how deficit is calculated for the purposes of determining how much an authority can transfer from one district to another to eliminate a district deficit. Section 11 removes an exception for failure to decertify a district from a requirement that an authority pay to the county auditor the amount generated from a property which is unlawfully kept or included in a TIF district. Section 12 makes a clarifying change regarding county auditors withholding increment from authorities that fail to comply with their annual requirements for disclosure and financial reporting. And Section 13 expands the sources of law from which you can derive the permitted purposes of TIF expenditures from Section 469-176 through the entirety of the TIF Act, which is 469-174 through 469-1794. Moving on, the rest of this article is all special legislation for various TIF projects. Section 14 is further expanding a five-year rule expansion for the city of Bloomington, and it allows extension of the duration of the district for the parcel, extension of the duration of the district on parcels where there's currently no buildings and won't be any buildings at the effective date of this section. Section 15 deals with special legislation for the city of Savage, dealing with the gravel pit. It extends their five-year rule period expansion from 8 to 12 years, and also expands the period during which the districts within that districts established pursuant to that special legislation can be enlarged. Section 16 would allow the city of Chatfield to develop a multi-level hotel using the commercial facility small city exception for economic development districts. Section 17 would allow Duluth or its economic development authority to establish redevelopment districts within a specified area and allow those districts to operate under several special rules. Those special rules would deem the districts to be supported by a finding that they were blighted as defined by law. They would deem expenditures on development of those parcels as being spent on blight correction, counting towards the general law requirement that 90% of increments from a redevelopment district be spent on blight correction, and it would allow use of that increment on developing seawalls and pier facing. Section 18 would be extending the duration of the those districts from Section 17 by 10 years. Section 19 would also, in a separate area, be allowing Duluth or its Economic Development Authority to be establishing redevelopment districts that would be subject to several special rules. Those special rules, again, would be exempting the district from blight finding requirements, from the requirement that increment be spent on blight correction. It would be exempting the districts from the prohibition on using increment for public parks or facilities or for social, recreational, or conference purposes. It would exempt the district from certain limitations on the purchase of property within the district, and it would exempt them also from pooling limitations. Section 20 is special legislation for the city of Fridley's, which allow it to spend money from existing tax and financing district on housing programs that are currently in place in their housing and redevelopment authority. That would be limited to the out district percentage of increment from that district. Section 21, 22, and 25 of this bill all grant small city status to specified cities. For the purposes of economic development districts, those would be the cities of Lafayette, Nicolet, and Spicer. Section 23 would be establishing special TIF authority for the city of Plymouth. It would allow Plymouth to establish a redevelopment district within specified parcels operating under special rules. Those special rules would deem the district to be supported by a blight finding, would exempt the district from the requirement that the increment be spent on blight correction, and it would allow up to 75% of the increment from that district to be spent on improvements to former County Road 47. Mm. Section 24 would be establishing special legislation for the city of Shakopee. This would be to deal with the gravel pit in Shakopee and is modeled off prior legislation that had been enacted for the cities of Apple Valley, Burnsville, Maple Grove, and Savage, including the Savage special legislation that's being modified by this article. Section 26 would be allowing West St. Paul to, for its Economic Development Authority, to establish a redevelopment district subject to special rules. Those special rules would deem the district to be supported by a blight finding and exempt the district from the requirement that increment be spent on blight correction. Section 27 is special legislation for the city of Woodbury, which would allow Woodbury to spend increment from one of its tax increment financing districts on the maintenance and improvement of Central Park. It would also allow Woodbury to extend the duration of the district by 5 years. And with that, I can take any questions on this article.
Okay. Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm following in the summary, so I don't know the page of the bill, but it pertains back to Section 23, the City of Plymouth. Is that going to be used to work on a trail or a county road that's not in the TIF district?
Yes, this is County Road 47 is not located within the confines of this district, and this would be authorizing them to spend increment on improvements to that road.
And Mr. Cope, if you'll remind us, it's adjacent to the district, right? And this is something that we've done before in other provisions and other TIF proposals.
Madam Chair, my memory is that this road is not adjacent to the TIF district. I'm not aware whether or not this has been authorized before in other special legislation. I could check and get back to the committee on that.
Okay, thank you. Is there further discussion on the article? Okay, so we're going to skip around a little bit because Mr. Cope is already there, right? And then.
Moving on to Article 7, which is on page 27 of the summary, and page 108 in the bill, if you're following along. Section 1 modifies the service requirements of property owners seeking to challenge the assessment of their property or the property taxes It lowers the amount of copies that must be served and lowers the number of county officials upon which service must be made. It requires only personal service on the county auditor and allows the county auditor to establish other means of serving it, including its electronic service. It requires the county auditor then to provide copies of the petition to the county officials which had previously been served by the taxpayer. And then it reduces the number of the copies of the petition and the proofs of service that must be filed with district court to commence a petition to challenge the assessment or property taxation. Section 2 removes the 10% minimum rate on delinquent property taxes and allows the county board by resolution to set a lower interest rate on property taxes than the prime rate charged by banks. Section 3 would allow the county board or a county auditor if the county board had delegated to the auditor its authority over tax forfeited lands to charge a lower interest rate on the unpaid balances of repurchase plans than the rate charged on delinquent taxes. Sections 4 through 13 are proposing a new chapter in law which would allow for the establishment of tourism improvement districts. Section 4 defines terms for the purposes of those districts, importantly defining a business as a class or type of lodging business as described in the municipality's ordinance, and is describing impacted business owners as the majority of business owners in a proposed or established tourism improvement district. Section 5 establishes the requirements for establishing a tourism improvement district, requiring that a petition, requiring that a municipality adopt an ordinance to establish a tourism improvement district after receiving a petition, or requiring a public hearing and a notice period prior to establishment. It also provides opportunities for business owners to appeal the decision to establish a tourism improvement district to the district court. Section 6 grants the municipality establishing a tourism improvement district authority to charge a service charge to fund activities and improvements within a tourism improvement district. Section 7 outlines the ways in which, the procedures for modifying the ordinance establishing a tourism improvement district. Section 8 allows, again, for collection of service charges and for the imposition of penalties for failure to pay service charges. Section 9 would establish a requirement that there be a tourism improvement association that appoints a governing board composed of impacted business owners or their representatives. And the Tourism Improvement Association as a board would be managing the funds raised through the service charges to select activities improvements to be performed within the Tourism Improvement District. Section 10 requires a petition in order to establish a Tourism Improvement District. Section 11 provides that impacted business owners have the right to veto the ordinance establishing a Tourism Improvement District and provides a 45-day provides for a minimum of a 45-day window before the Tourism Improvement District becomes effective after adoption of the ordinance establishing the district, and during that time, business owners could file a petition to veto the establishment of the district. Section 12 provides procedures for disestablishing a Tourism Improvement District, and again provides business owners the opportunity to veto the disestablishment of a tourism improvement district. And Section 13 prohibits a county from establishing a tourism improvement district in the area where a city or town has established one, and then vice versa would prevent a city or town from establishing a tourism improvement district in the area where a county has established a tourism improvement district. Section 14 would allow the City of Virginia to issue bonds to finance construction of a public safety building, and it would exempt those bonds from the City of Virginia's net debt limit. Section 15 would be extending the period of redemption to 3 years for properties that have been in targeted communities within Ramsey County, effective for taxes that become due in this year or later. And that concludes Article 7.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Cope. Are there any further questions on Article 7? Okay. Well, seeing none, we'll move back to Article 6 with Ms. Hagler. For folks following, that's page 27 in your overview.
Madam Chair and members, Article 6, starting on page 27 of the bill summary, is just three provisions.
Oh, hang on, Ms. Hagler. And that's page 106 in the bill text, if you're filing in the bill text. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Sections 1 and 2 provide an extension to the City of Duluth's tourism tax to allow the city to collect up to $54 million for additional capital improvements to park-based athletic facilities. Section 1 extends the food and beverage tax portion, and Section 2 makes the corresponding change to the lodging tax portion. And this is the House File 2382 as it was heard in committee with no changes. And then lastly, Section 3 provides modifications to Cook County's local lodging tax. It removes the authorization for the county to impose an admission tax, and then extends the duration of the lodging tax from 15 to 30 years. And this was House File 124 with no changes from how it was heard in committee. And Madam Chair and members, that concludes the local tax article and the walkthrough. I can turn it over to Michelle for the spreadsheet.
Sure. Are there any questions on this last article that we're reviewing? Okay, great. We'll move on to Michelle for the overview of the spreadsheet. This should also be in your member packets.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the division. Catherine Schill, House Fiscal Analysis. I'll be going over the spreadsheet today. The spreadsheet that was posted and in your packets is dated 3/21/23. 10 a.m. This is to House File 1377, the Delete All Amendment. All of the changes presented here are to the February 2023 forecast, and dollars are in thousands. I will draw your attention to the small note at the top of the table. Positive numbers here are program expenditures or revenue losses, and negative numbers are a cost. That is different than the revenue estimates that are presented to you in committee. So this is the spending side of the spreadsheet. That's just a kind reminder. Looking at the spreadsheet and the general fund summary, these are impacts to the general fund. You'll see on line one, the base level for spending, February 2023 forecast for tax aids and credits. Roughly for 22-23, that's $4.64 billion. For 24-25, it's $4.43 billion. And for 26-27 is $4.55 billion. Presented to you in this DE amendment is, you can see the proposed changes on line two, a total of additional spending of $126,000 in 2023. $648.4 million in 24 and 25, and $916.3 million in 26 and 27. And line three provides you a total for those. Now for some attention to a detail, property tax refunds are reflected, those changes presented in the DE on lines 5 through 21 on page 20, on page 1. The first line, lines 6 and 7, you'll see Representative Leslie Gard's proposal for homestead credit state refund to reduce all eligible homeowner copays by 5%. This is different than what was presented in committee. If you remember, that overall proposal had additional components to it with a cost of about $98 million starting in 25. This proposal, that cost applies only to the copays of 5%, as Mr. Williams mentioned. The cost is $41.8 million in 25 and just under $85 million in 26 and 27. Moving down the page, lines 8 through 12, you'll see Representative Coulter's bill with the renter's credit conversion to an income tax credit. This is exactly as it was presented in committee with one adjustment. We've delayed the implementation by 1 year. And so what you'll see for the fiscal impact of 24 and 25 is the $378.6 million. And then in the tails, it's $275.5 million. Moving down the page, line 14 is Representative Norris's changes to the market value exclusion for homesteads. That's exactly how you saw it in committee. The impact is in the tails, a cost savings of $2.6 million. It's line 15, but it's a combination of two bills, House File 236 and 858. This is provisions for the spouses of disabled veterans, and it's the homestead market value exclusion. This item is different than what was presented originally in committee that had a broader impact. This is applying only to the deadline, which is eliminated for qualifying spouses. The cost impact is a savings of $30,000 in 25 and a savings of $80,000 in 26 and 27. Line 17 is Representative Richardson's bill for community land trusts. This has a slight tweak to it because of the amendment that was included in committee, and the cost savings is in the tails, slightly greater cost savings of a total of $520,000. Line 18 is for the senior citizens property tax deferral. That is exactly how you heard it in committee, with a cost of $260,000 in 24-25 and $1.3 million in 26-27. Line 20 is Representative Olson's bill for elderly living facilities exempted from taxation. That's exactly how we heard it in committee. Moving on to page 2. Some additional items with property tax changes. Lines 24. Those three bills, Representative Anderson's solar generating system, that's exactly how we heard it in committee, with a negligible savings. House File 875, Representative Becker Finn, that's exactly also how we heard it in committee. That first year of cost impact, that $10,000, is to the state general fund. The state general levy change, and so that will be different as we include this on the when we get to a committee with the omnibus tax bill. And line 24 is Representative Kozlowski's bill for airport property. Once again, just exactly how we heard it in committee. Lines 25 through 32 are the changes for mining tax, House File 2012, which you'd find in Article 2. Once again, those are exactly how we heard it in committee, with a cost savings of $1.4 million in the tails. Moving down the page to aids and credits, you'll see House File 1377 changes to local government aid. This is different, as Mr. Swanson pointed out, from what we heard in committee. The appropriation increase is $100 million instead of $150 million. And with that change, there are corresponding changes to property tax interactions and income tax interactions that you'll see on the page. Lines 40 and 41 are the LGA penalty forgiveness items for both Representative Swazinski and Representative Erdahl's bills. These cost impacts actually happen in fiscal 23, so that is why you'll see additional columns. Usually we focus on 24, 25, and then the tails. This one is happening prior to June 30, 2023. Therefore, the cost is in fiscal 2023. Moving down the page, lines 43 through 47, once again, House File 1377. These are county program aid increases, and once again, as Mr. Swanson mentioned, at $100 million instead of $150 million. And the corresponding changes in interactions. Moving to page 3, last few items here. Lines 48 through 52 are Representative Leslie Gars House File 825. These are the PILT changes, exactly how we heard them in committee. A cost of just under $9 million in 24 and 25 and $20.4 million in 26 and 27. Lines 53 through 55 are the Soil and Water Conservation District aids. This was proposed at $22 million per year in the original bill. The funding here is $12 million per year, for a total of $24 million in 24 and 25, and once again the same in 26 and 27. Lines 56 through 62 are House File 1427, Electric Generation Transition Aid. This is exactly how we heard it in committee, with a cost impact of $2 million roughly in 24, 25, and $7.6 million in 26 and 27. That gets us to our total, which is reflected on line 63. Once again, it's the same total as what I went over on line 2. Cost impacts for 22, 23, $126,000. 24, 25, $648.4 million. And 26, 27, $916.34 million. The rest of the spreadsheet, on page 3, page 4, page 5, are no cost changes. These are the bills. First of all, on the bottom of page 3, these are all reflected in Article 7, the miscellaneous article. Flipping to page 4, the listing of all the property tax changes for tax increment financing can be found in Article 5. Once again, no cost. And the local lodging and tourism taxes on page 5 are located in Article 6. Madam Chair, that concludes the presentation of the spreadsheet.
Great. Thank you, Michelle. Are there any clarifying questions on the spreadsheet? Okay, so seeing none, we're going to move to a testimony from Commissioner Marquardt. Commissioner, welcome to the committee.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Paul Marquardt, Commissioner of Revenue, and thank you for the invite. And on behalf of Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan, I want to commend Chair Leslie Gard, members of the committee, and staff who have put together a very strong division report. And the governor is especially appreciative of the division's focus on property tax relief. And there are three provisions in here that are almost identical, or very close, the same provisions that are in the governor's proposal. And the one is the local government aid and county program aid increases. Certainly, they are not at the same level or the same extent, but the recognition that local government aid and county program aid play a very important part in reducing property taxes and providing important needed services to our residents and constituents of our cities and counties is very, very important. And also the new formula, which was also in the governor and lieutenant governor's plan. So thank you so much for including that new formula that's now in place there in this proposal. A couple other similar items is a senior property tax deferral, which has been a program that is underutilized. Maybe these changes can help increase the utilization on that program. And the third thing that's also in the governor's proposal in this division report is the $12 million permanent funding in the soil and water conservation districts. And all of us who've been around a while know we've looked at that issue for quite some time. So while the homestead credit state refund and the moving the renter's refund to the renter's credit are not part of the governor's proposal, this is an excellent way to get direct relief, property tax relief to residents. So members, the governor looks forward to working with this division, the House and Senate tax committees, as we move forward in providing a strong tax bill that will benefit Minnesotans throughout the state. And I will finish with that I am now on the other side of the table, and the department will continue to work with both tax committees in the House and Senate to make sure any changes you make, we can administrate as efficiently as we can. So thank you so much, and congrats on some really good work. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Appreciate it. All right. I also appreciate the brevity. Okay. So, Lead Quam, if it's possible, can we hold this for member discussion on Friday, because we're running really tight on time today?
Well, Madam Chair, I would like, I had a question for the commissioner. So if the commissioner will be around for questions, then that's fine.
Or, okay, well, I guess let's be efficient, right? Okay, Commissioner Marquardt. I guess Lead Quam, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was wondering the commissioner's description of what's different in the formula change this year than last year when it was a divided. So I'm just trying to understand what changes or difference between those two.
So, Madam Chair, Representative Quam, that might be best for
Commissioner Marquardt. Yeah, or I think. Okay, actually, I'm going to go to Mr. Swanson to help answer this question.
Madam Chair and Representative Quam, so I believe you're asking about the differences in the maybe the LGA formula update between the governor's bill and what is included in the division report. And if that's the case, then maybe you could clarify the question, Representative Quam.
Lead Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm interested in there was a, I believe, a formula tweak in the last session when we had a divided. What is the difference between that one and the current one, since it's all one party? I'm just trying to understand the transition between the agreement last time and the agreement this time for the formula.
Mr. Swanson.
Madam Chair and Representative Quam, so if you're referring to the work on the LGA formula in last year's session, The formula update that was included in last year's bill was sort of the result of work between nonpartisan staff and the city groups, and they used the regression models to develop the new factors within the formula. That same formula is included in the division report this year. The only change is that those regression models were run on updated data, so we updated the data 1 year to be using the most recent data, and the only thing that changes are the coefficients that you see in front of the factors in Section 6 of Article 3. The last thing that I'll mention is that I don't remember what was included in the conference committee agreement. Perhaps the commissioner can maybe speak to that, but I don't think that the formula update was included in that agreement. I believe it may have just been an appropriation change.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Swanson. Okay, so this is very much member discussion for Friday. Are there any other questions for Commissioner Marquardt before?
No. Madam Chair, I just wanted to make sure, because on Friday I'm assuming it'll be less populated around the table and maybe with witnesses. That's why I'm trying to.
Sure.
I had people ask me specifically, you had something last year and now you've got something this year, and they wanted it publicly asked.
Okay.
What the differences were. Thank you.
Thank you, Lee Quam. Well, I mean, all of our meetings are publicly televised, and I'm hopeful everybody will be joining us on Friday at 1 p.m. for a riveting member discussion. So thank you. Okay, so we're going to move on next to State Auditor Julie Baja. Okay. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Lee, Vice Chair, Chair Lee, Chair Liz Lagarde, Lead Quam, and I'm so excited. You bumped me up even. I'm excited to to go this early. Just wanted to...
Oh, please state your name for the record. Thank you.
My name is Julie Blaha, and I am your state auditor. I wanted to thank you, Chair Lizelgard, division members for this, for the OSA tax increment finance items in the bill. I also really want to thank the team that put these items together, starting with Director Nord, our TIF division, and our legal teams. Also, House and Senate and admin staff, Eric Sylvia, Justin Cope, Sarah Adam, and in particular, the stakeholders, many of whom are in the room, that advised us from the League of Minnesota Cities, Metro Cities, MICA, AMC, MSBA, the practitioners, city, county, and school district staff, MASBO. We had a great team that was supporting this. And ultimately, we believe these changes will improve both implementation and oversight of an important tool for economic development. And if good with the chair, a director, our TIF director, Jason Nord, is also here, and he could also do his testimony right now as well.
Yeah, let's do that in the spirit of efficiency. So we're going to move, that concludes agency testimony. We're going to move to public testimony on the bill. Mr. Nord. Yeah. Oh, actually, sorry, excuse me. Okay, so Mr. Nord, we'll move to Mr. Nord, and I'd also ask that you respect the, I guess, the 1.5 minute time limit that we have for everyone. Thanks.
Madam Chair, thank you. My name is Jason Nord. I'm the director of the TIF division at the Office of the State Auditor. I'll be very brief. I just want to thank you for including these provisions in this bill. I know TIF is an arcane subject with lots of complicated details that people don't gravitate towards. There is a lot of ambiguity in the current law that we've been struggling with, and these provisions help overcome that ambiguity so that it'll be easier for authorities to comply and easier for us to do oversight. So thank you for the inclusion of these provisions.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Nord. Okay, so with that, that concludes our agency testimony. We will move to public testimony on the bill. I have first Nathan Jessen, and if Commissioner Mattis Castile can be on deck. I'm going to ask everyone to respect our two-minute time limit, seeing as we are short on time today. We want to make sure that everyone gets to say their piece. Mr. Jessen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the division. My name is Nathan Jessen. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. I just want to thank the chair and the work that the division has done looking at property taxes holistically. This division reflects kind of a multi-pronged approach. You've got the renters and homeowners refunds, the market value exclusion, and local government aid. On LGA in particular, just because it's brought up, I want to mention the formula update and the broad level of buy-in. And the formula last year and this year, which is largely the same, between our organization, the Minnesota Association of Small Cities, the Coalition Greater Minnesota Cities, and Metro Cities. We work with nonpartisan staff to come to that formula update, which is pretty typical to happen every 10 years or so. And then just another note, I want to thank the committee for looking at property taxes onto residential property carefully. It's something that I think you've taken a thoughtful approach here, and we appreciate your work on that. I've also submitted a letter with additional testimony on a number of issues if people want to take a look at that. So thank you for the time today.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Justin. All right, Commissioner Mattis Castile. And if you could have Mr. Zart on deck, please.
Hello, Madam Chair. I'm Trista Mattis Castile, Chair of the Ramsey County Board of Commissioners, and I just want to say thank you to Chair Lizelgard and the committee for really taking a comprehensive approach to this tax bill. In Ramsey County, one of our biggest issues and most costly issue is about housing stability. And this bill, in a lot of ways, really stabilizes our housing for seniors, for renters, with the homestead credit, the renter's credit, making it easier. And especially, Chair Lee, thank you for your work on making sure that we are working to address the equity issues around the targeted neighborhoods. That is really incredible. I also just want to say thank you on behalf of Ramsey County and our county commissioners across the state for really taking a big leap toward addressing the real need for county program aid. We really appreciate this. The need is great, and this is specifically will buy down our levies across counties, across the state, and in Ramsey County to make sure that we continue with the housing affordability across our community. So just wanted to say thank you. This is a great step forward to address the need. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Okay, and then on deck, I have Mr. Hilgart. Welcome, Mr. Zart. Please state your name and your organization for the record.
Thank you, Chair and members. My name is Shane Zart with the firm Flaherty & Hood, and testifying today on behalf of the Coalition of Utility Cities, which is a group of seven cities that host some of the state's largest remaining power plants. And throughout the session, you heard a couple of bills that were aimed at supporting the power plant host communities as they'll be coping with the impacts of those plants retiring in the coming years. You heard, for example, from the mayor of Oak Park Heights, where the King plant it makes up more than 30% of their city's tax base. It will be retiring more than 10 years sooner than once expected, and from other communities where the plants in their cities make up as much as 70% of the local tax base. So specifically, I want to thank you for including Representative Josiah Hill's House File 1427 in the division report, which would create that electric generation transition aid program and help these cities cope with and prevent the massive shift of tax burden that can take place at the end of a plant's life. Just want to close by saying these communities have been proud to host these facilities that have powered the region, and this bill is one of the most meaningful and impactful things that the state can do in helping ease the burden as those plants retire. So I also want to thank the Department of Revenue. They've been a fantastic partner in making sure that if this thing goes forward, that it's administrable. There's still some of those discussions ongoing, but they've been a great partner, and we look forward to continuing those conversations with them and with the committee throughout the rest of the session. So thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Hilgart. So I have on deck Bradley Peterson. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Matt Hilgart. I work for the Association of Minnesota Counties, an organization representing Minnesota's 87 counties. I want to open by thanking the chair and others for putting together such a comprehensive bill and for the committee's particular interest, bipartisan interest, in property tax relief. Earlier this session, we outlined in our mind what property tax relief looked like from a county perspective, and that's threefold. Direct relief via mechanisms included in this bill, which is the homestead credit, exclusion, senior property tax deferral, renter's credit, limiting erosion of tax base by not introducing or keeping bills in here that would create class reductions, major shifts onto other residents, and third, levy reinforcing deteriorating aid mechanisms such as LGA and CPA. This bill does all three of those things. You're likely going to hear from a lot of local government lobbyists today saying those similar things, but it all boils down to this, and that is thank you. The investment included in this bill is extremely consequential and will positively impact communities, taxpayers, and residents. And I want to cement this last point, because I think sometimes we lose track of this last point in a sea of acronyms like CPA, PILT, SWCD, and more, and probably from familiar lobbyist faces like myself in this committee. But at the core of this, these programs help people and help communities across the state. You've heard from countless members of counties about the roller coaster of dependability between the state and local government relationship this year, and this bill represents a rebuilding and a recentering of that relationship. So to Chair Liz Lagarde and others on this committee, we thank you for your work and look forward to continuing to work with you towards a tax bill later this session.
Great. Thank you. Okay, next I have Melvin Tennant on deck. Bradley Peterson. All right. Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Chair Liz Lagarde, my name is Melvin Tennant, President and CEO of Meet Minneapolis, our convention and visitors association, representing the nearly 30,000 workers in Minneapolis who make their living in travel and tourism. And I'm going to be very brief today, and thank you for including in your property tax division report the proposal authorizing a municipality to establish a tourism improvement district, TID. And although I'm here representing Meet Minneapolis specifically, I just wanted to let you know that this proposal is supported by many tourism and business organizations across our state. In other states, the TID has proven to be a useful tool in generating funding for the tourism industry, which in turn grows the industry and results in economic benefit for those residents in the local areas of those states. We believe that this will be a real game changer for us to help the tourism industry continue its recovery, but also prepare us for an exciting future. So in closing, I just want to say again, thank you very much for including the TID authorizing legislation in your bill, and we will be good stewards of these new resources. Thank you again very, very much.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Tennant. Mr. Peterson. I have on deck Mr. Ungaro. Please proceed. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Again, my name is Bradley Peterson, here today on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities.
As always, it's a great day to talk about local government aid, which is our organization's highest priority. I'm here to offer my full-throated support for the package that Representative Liz Lagarde has put together when it comes to local government aid, the appropriation, the formula changes, and the ongoing inflation factor will all provide certainty for cities across the state. The formula, as you've heard, we worked with the League of Minnesota Cities, the Small Cities Association, and the Metro Cities to come up with what I am confident is a formula that works for cities across the state, including in greater Minnesota. The inflation factor will add more certainty for cities as we go forward and will definitely help the property tax relief aspect of local government aid. And finally, the appropriation. In 2013, when we updated the formula, we had an appropriation increase of $80 million. This bill has an appropriation of $100 million. This is the number that we're going to work hard with you and with Chair Liz Lagarde to get across the finish line here before session ends. Appreciate all of your work on this. Appreciate all the work of Chair Liz Lagarde. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. All right. I have on deck a Mr. Dahl. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Ungaro.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm John Ungaro, Government Relations Director for St. Louis County. First of all, I'd like to thank the committee for the PILT provisions, which Chair Liz Lagarde carried, and something which will substantially benefit over 20 counties in northern Minnesota. Once again, this year, this committee has recognized the extreme disparity that exists in the state when it comes to PILT payments. When over 90% of the 8 million acres of state PILT lands are located in northern Minnesota, yet lately less than 10% of the revenue for those PILT lands is finding its way to those counties in northern Minnesota, certainly something is wrong with that picture. And we're glad that the provisions in this bill will help remedy most of that disparity. And again, we thank you for that. Finally, if you want to know what this means in the real world, if this should pass, I can give you an example of just one of those 20 counties in northern Minnesota, specifically Couchiching County. Couchiching County had their jail ordered by DOC to close, so they had to build a new jail. And the first year debt service on that jail caused the Couchiching County Board to have to raise its levy by 22% to meet the first year debt service on that jail. If this provision should pass, literally Couchiching County will be able to neutralize and eliminate that 22% increase because the PILT funding will backfill what the property taxpayers in Couchiching County are suddenly having to pay for. So it'll be real property tax reform for the people of Couchiching County and throughout the 20 plus counties in northern Minnesota. So thank you once again.
Great, thank you. On deck, I have Cody Holliday. Welcome, Mr. Dahl. Please state your name and organization for the record.
Good, Madam. My name is Michael Dahl. I'm Public Policy Director at Homeline. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of sections of this bill that deal with the increase and expansion of the renter's credit. The renter's credit in its current form provides much needed assistance for eligible households who know about it. The proposed legislation is transformative in making eligibility more understandable to Minnesota renters. Placing the credit on a household's annual tax forms will help an estimated 119,000 renter households who are currently eligible but don't claim the credit. They'll know it is theirs. The renter's credit allows renters who avail themselves of it to cover basic necessities like school supplies, clothing, non-perishable foods, car repairs, and medications. Let's face it, low-income renter households are struggling. In addition to the latest wave of inflation, for decades renters have had to deal with escalating housing costs. According to a report from the Minnesota Housing Partnership, the state of the state's housing 2020-2021, housing costs have continued to increase disproportionately to income. Between 2000 and 2019, the median renter income has increased by just 1%, while the gross median rent has increased by 14%. This is exacerbated by a lack of supply, which has become more dire since the last time that I talked to this committee. Right now, there is a gap of 103,000 units that are affordable and available that are not available for extremely low-income households. It should be evident that low-income renters are facing many challenges in today's economy in general and the housing market specifically. The renter's credit will increase, and expansion will provide much-needed relief. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dahl. Okay, so on deck, I have Patricia Noman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I am Cody Holliday with the law firm Fredrickson & Byron, here today on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Townships. We would like to thank Chair Lissigard and the committee for including the payment in lieu of taxes, or PILT provisions, included in Article 3, Sections 15, 16, and 17 of the amendment. These sections address shortcomings in the PILT program that townships have been working on along with our county partners for a long time. When land goes public and becomes non-taxable, townships still have the same responsibility to provide road, fire protection, and other emergency services, but without the support of the tax revenue from these lands. The PILT program exists to offer some reimbursement to townships to compensate for this lost tax revenue, but when land becomes non-taxable, there's a problem in that system. And that problem is that non-taxable land is eventually reassessed and the value drastically decreases, which leads to the PILT payments decreasing. Townships have come to dislike any part of the land becoming untaxable because they expect that at some point down the road, the PILT program will end up paying very little to compensate the town for the loss of tax revenue. The Minnesota Association of Townships would like to hold townships harmless for lost tax revenue by seeking increased, sustainable, and dedicated funding for the PILT program, and the assurances that the value of these lands will not be decreased only because they become non-taxable. The Minnesota Association of Townships supports and is thankful for the inclusion of these provisions in the division report. And I thank you for your time.
Great, thank you. Next, I have Paul Ager on deck. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and organization for the record.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. My name is Patricia Nauman. I'm the Executive Director of Metro Cities, representing cities in the 7-county metropolitan area at the legislature and executive branch. I'll be very brief today. Just want to note, first of all, thank you to Representative Lissigard for his work with the city organizations on the local government aid formula and updates. Metro Cities does support both the formula updates that recognize more current levels of city need as well as updated data, and also we appreciate the appropriation increase for local government aid. Local government aid is a very vital part of the state and local relationship and partnership, and we appreciate the support that is reflected in that appropriation increase with this bill. Just very briefly, Metro Cities also does support the provisions in Article 5 related to tax increment financing that were recommended by the Office of the State Auditor. We did work very closely with the auditor over a period of years to make sure that those changes were something that worked for all parties, and we support those. Additionally and finally, Metro Cities does support both the increased amounts for the homestead credit refund as well as the increases in the homestead market value exclusion, which do recognize the need to keep those programs updated and current. Thank you very much.
Great, thank you. So on deck, I have Sheila Vanny. I'm sorry if I mispronounced that. Welcome to committee, Mr. Ager.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Ager, and I'm Senior Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Realtors Association. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning on the Property Tax Division Report. I'd also like to thank Chair Lissigard and the members of this committee for having a focus this session on direct property tax relief for homeowners, which is vitally needed. You know, while reducing the property tax burden should always be a high priority, is probably even more critical right now. When home values are rising faster than other types of property, the property tax burden can shift on homeowners, putting pressure on family budgets, particularly those on a fixed income. We appreciate the increases in value thresholds and the maximum exclusion amount for the homestead market value exclusion in Article 1, Section 8 However, just a reminder that these amounts have not been adjusted since the exclusion was created in 2011, and we hope there will be some consideration along the way this session to increasing these amounts in the final omnibus tax bill. We also appreciate the provision increasing the household income limit and reducing the number of years a homeowner must own and occupy the property to qualify for the senior citizens property tax deferral program in Article 1, Section 10. I think that's a provision that can help a lot of seniors age in place and will be welcome in this session. We also support the reduction in the copay percentage for the Homestead Credit Refund Program. This is a really important program that helps make homeownership more affordable, and any increases in that program are very helpful in providing that direct property tax relief to homeowners, which again does not shift any burden onto other types of property. And finally, we are disappointed that the division report does not include changes to the targeting property tax refund program, which also provides direct relief to homeowners who have large property tax increases from one year to the next. You did hear bills, two bills this session. Representative Uakim and Representative Norris both had bills in the division which would have reduced the percentage to qualify for the targeting refund and increase the maximum refund. And again, we just hope that as discussions progress this session on the final omnibus tax bill, that hopefully that'll be in the mix as well. And finally, just thank you again for the opportunity to testify, and thank you for your work on providing direct property tax relief through this division report. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Great, thank you. I have on deck Nan Madden.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. Sheila Vanney, I'm the Assistant Director with the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. We represent the state's 440 elected SWCD supervisors and their over 460 conservation staff. I want to thank Chair Liz Lagarde for including a very important SWCD aid provision in the bill. This is a fundamental shift in providing the state's share of funding SWCDs in a more permanent and reliable way, and we greatly appreciate that. At the same time, I do need to call out that the level of funding in the bill as it stands is well below the amount that we need. The $22 million that we've been seeking in Representative Ryer's bill is not a bloated funding ask. It is a real reflection of workload issues that SWCDs are facing across the state. We have massive bottlenecks in our statewide conservation delivery system. We're not able to keep up with the project dollars that are coming our way, not to mention the opportunity to fully leverage some federal funding opportunities should we provide this level of funding to SWCDs. Otherwise, we're potentially leaving those federal dollars on the table. So, Madam Chair and members, I hope there's an opportunity to reconsider the level of funding for SWCD aid in the bill moving forward, but again, want to just express our sincere gratitude for this new funding mechanism. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Ms. Vanney. Okay, I have Matt Massman on deck.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today in support of Article 4. I want to thank Chair Liz Lagarde and members of the committee for including this exciting renters credit expansion, that, which represents the work that the House brought forward last year and was included in the 2022 tax agreement. This portion of the division report takes bold action to respond to the challenges that everyday Minnesotans are facing. Income-targeted property tax refunds like the renter's credit are a powerful tool the state can use to reduce one of the costs of housing and move toward a stronger, more equitable future. Renters in every part of the state would benefit from the division report's actions to reduce barriers so that more folks who are already eligible receive the property tax refunds they qualify for. It simplifies the income calculation for purposes of the credit, making it easier for renters to apply for and for the department to process. It provides larger property tax refunds for many currently eligible households and allows more renters to qualify. And it gets refunds out to renters much sooner, reversing a timing shift that has been in place for many decades. These game-changing outcomes will occur while maintaining the sliding structure of the renter's credit. It prioritizes those with the lowest incomes and those whose property taxes are particularly high in relation to their incomes. This renter's credit expansion would be a needed economic boost for Minnesotans struggling to make ends meet, whether they be workers, families, seniors, or people with disabilities. Thank you for making these Minnesotans a priority in the division report.
Great, thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Matt Mossman with the Minnesota Inter-County Association. Property tax relief is a top priority for our 15 member counties, 11 in greater Minnesota and four counties in the suburban area. We support, and I want to thank Chair Liz Lagarde, as have others, for putting together a property tax division report that provides comprehensive property tax relief through a combination of levy reduction by increasing county program aid and increasing per acre payment levels for PILT lands, through direct property tax relief to renters and homeowners, and by restoring tax relief that was intended when the homestead market value exclusion was first enacted over a decade ago, Representative Norris's provision. As one county commissioner put it when testifying in support of House File 1377 several weeks ago, county governments are the state's front door for a host of for a range of state-mandated programs. County governments embrace that work to support Minnesota families and communities and economies, and do that work while also offering, often fostering innovation and system improvements in partnership with the state. Partnership is the key. The order of magnitude represented in this bill with the $100 million proposed increase in county program aid, and really, I think importantly, the annual appropriation adjustment to ensure that CPA increase will increase as costs increase over time, really recognizes and renews the historic fiscal partnership with the state to provide support for the human capital and the organizational infrastructure that counties have to have in place to implement those state programs. Finally, property tax relief and housing equity and access often requires additional targeted strategies that we also support. And to that point, I just want to call out three. We support the conversion of the renter's credit from a refundable income tax credit, the expansion of the senior deferral program to help seniors remain in their homes, and the removal of the minimum 10% interest rate on delinquent property taxes. We appreciate the comprehensive bill put forward, and we look forward to working with the chair and the committee to help make this legislation become law. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. And thank you to all the testifiers for respecting our time limits today. I appreciate it, Mr. Madden. Representative Graffalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does that conclude our public testimony portion of the meeting?
That concludes our public testimony of the DE amendment.
So, yes. Madam Chair, my apologies, but I'm going to be absent from the debate on Friday, so I have one question for the chair, and I'm wondering if you can indulge me if I could ask that today.
I suppose. We have 3 minutes left, so go ahead, Mr. Garofalo.
Thank you. It's Representative Garofalo, Madam
Excuse
Chair.
Me. Yes.
I take that title very seriously. So
and, well, you know, you might get a pay bump, actually. If you, you
oh, what's that? A pay bump, yeah. Okay. And I have 2 minutes, yeah. So, Madam Chair, Representative Liz Lagarde, again, my apologies. I'll be absent from the debate on Friday due to a previous commitment. But in the state of Minnesota, we have about 20 fast-growing suburbs. And despite the increase in the LGA appropriation, there is only one city in that fast-growing suburb that is actually getting a cut in their projected LGA. And that is my home city of the city of Farmington, where we are receiving a devastating cut of $252 to our local government aid formula. I'm wondering, Chair Liz Lagarde, in light of the fact that you know you have a $648 million target, could we perhaps work on an amendment for some transition aid for Farmington to smooth that reduction in projected LGA payments?
Chair Liz Lagarde.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo. You are a good man, and you're fighting for your constituents and your district, and I would be more than willing to sit down with you and have this discussion.
Great.
And perhaps, Madam Chair, perhaps I could work with the chair of the tax committee well on trying to find that $252 somewhere within her $3 billion target. Those things are going to fit. So,
yeah, I'm sure we will figure it out, Representative Garofalo.
A serious question, though, if I can ask, and I texted the chair privately
okay.
on this. does the property tax subdivision have a hard target of the $648 million, or are amendments that would allow that to be to have it increase, to have an increased cost to the general fund in order on Friday?
Yeah, I'll direct that to our tax chair.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo. There isn't a hard target for the division.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, both chairs.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So thank you, members. We will be back on Friday at 1 p.m. in this room to conduct further member discussion and markup of the bill. And we are adjourned.